Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Good morning.
This is Advanced Technology Village. I understand our lights aren't working, so you'll be informed otherwise if you want to keep track of your time by some other mechanical means, by somebody will tell you what the time is.
They're going to hold up white sheets and red sheets.
The first case this morning is National Products Production Workers Union versus Sigma. Mr. Cameron?
May I approach?
Yes.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. This case arose out of the following facts. National Production Workers Union Insurance Trust is an employee beneficiary trust. And back in 2003, they approached their insurance agent, Robert Mondo, to obtain a policy for the benefit of the beneficiaries of the trust. Back at that time, the trust felt that they could provide this additional benefit for their members, provided that the cost would be defrayed in a certain manner by a designation of the benefits of a life insurance policy being partly paid to the trust. This way, some of that money would go back into the trust, and the plan could sustain this benefit for a period of time. What the trust did was the trust asked for the agent, Mr. Mondo, to obtain a policy in which the policy would be a 50% beneficiary. In other words, 50% would go to the member and 50% would go to the trust. And that way it would help fund the future premiums. The trust asked Mr. Mondo to get this policy. Mr. Mondo did have the authority to field various offers, send out proposals. And he did that in one of the defendant in this case, the appellee, Cigna, Lina, responded and told Mr. Mondo that they would be able to issue the policy. Mr. Mondo stated that these are unusual terms, the trust would be a 50% beneficiary, and Mr. Mondo expressed to Lina that this was a critical term of the policy. They needed this term. And the Cigna and Lina and other employees of subsidiaries of Cigna did tell Mr. Mondo this was doable, so we can issue this policy. And at some point, a policy was generated, and from what I understand, what the record shows, was delivered to Mr. Mondo. There's a dispute with respect to whether it was ever delivered to the trust.
I don't find a copy of that contract in your stuff. Did you submit one, or did you still not get it?
We did not get it. I believe what happened is that there were some signatory pages that were faxed back and forth, and probably maybe hard copies were delivered, but the policy itself was not delivered to the trust.
But it's not, at least I didn't find it. Is it part of this record somewhere?
I believe at least part of it is.
Well, I mean, I was only curious to see where it said, talked about the beneficiary in the contract.
Okay, I believe that is part of the record, at least that portion of the policy that was generated.
All right, I guess it's somewhere in the record. I don't have it, but that didn't mean anything.
I believe that it is. In any event, that term was not contained. In other words, that critical term was not contained in the policy, and I don't think there's any dispute about that. What happened was the trust started paying its premiums, assuming that it was going to be a 50% beneficiary. It never was. When the time came to put in a claim and the trust asked for its 50% benefit, the insurer said no. We can't do that. It wasn't part of the policy. There was some conversation going back and forth between Mr. Mondo and the representatives of Cigna, and it turns out that position of the insurer was that not only wasn't this policy, wasn't this term contained in the policy, but that it was prohibited by Illinois law. To make a long story short, there was a letter written by one of Cigna's attorneys explaining that we understand that you wanted this term. There was no meeting of the minds. We're not going to pay this. We're sorry we can't do anything. And that led us to this point.
They paid $100,000, didn't they, to the beneficiary?
They paid $100,000 to the employee, the insured.
Yeah.
So they did pay, but they didn't pay under the terms that the union thought it was getting and that Lina knew the union, the trust wanted. The trust didn't know this until their claim was denied. As the court's quite right, there was a benefit paid, but it was
nobody bothered reading the policy.
I'm sorry.
Nobody bothered reading the policy.
Well, the only one who had the policy was Mr. Mondo, and whether he bothered to read it, I don't know. It doesn't appear that he read it. He acted as if he didn't read it because he made the claim. He was still acting in a position that he wanted to get the 50% for the trust.
And he was the agent of the trust.
Well, that's to the heart of the case, and I submit that...
He really is, but I want to know how you think he wasn't.
Well, he was an agent of the trust. The trust doesn't dispute that. The issue is whether or not his agency extended to obtaining a policy that was contrary to his authority. In other words, not only did Mr. Mondo know...
There'd be a fight between the trust and Mondo, not between the...
I'm sorry?
That would entail a fight between the trust and Mondo, wouldn't it?
Well, it would, and I would also submit, though, that Cigna Lina knew that Mr. Mondo's authority did not extend to purchasing this policy. In other words, there's admissions in the record that Lina knew that this was a critical term. They knew that Mondo's authority, Mondo represented that his authority was to obtain a policy that contained this term. Lina issued a policy that did not contain this term. They knew that that was not what Mondo was authorized to buy. And
does the trust agree that the Illinois law forbids the contract that you wanted?
I don't know if that, well, there are two things. I'm not sure if the way I read the law, whether it does prohibit that law, prohibit that policy.
Is there a question on that matter? How could there be a question as to whether the Illinois law forbade it? I mean, it's a matter of written law, isn't it?
Well, I don't interpret the law the same way that Cigna does. I don't see that policy is restricted by the law. But even if it is, I submit that that's not really relevant. The point is that the policy didn't contain that term for whatever reason. And Cigna acknowledges that, and they acknowledge that that's what Lina wanted, and they acknowledge that that's what Mondo was authorized to buy. There's nothing in the record which would demonstrate that Mondo had the authority, or that Lina even thought Mondo had the authority to change that term. Other terms might be arguable that Mondo did have authority. He's an agent, but he's not... an employee of the trust, and he's not directed specifically with respect to everything that he does. But he was directed with this one term, and it's the one term that wasn't in the policy.
So, as I understand it, Mondo solicits an offer from the insurance company.
Yes.
And they tender an insurance policy to him, and he accepts it.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, but... The point is, he was not authorized to accept that policy.
By his boss, the trust.
He was not authorized, and Lina knew that he wasn't authorized to accept that policy. In other words, I think
all he had to do was say no, then. I don't want the policy. It doesn't meet the standards I asked for.
Well, he could have said that, but... On the other hand, I don't think that Lina was entitled to rely on Mondo's not doing anything when they knew that the policy was supposed to contain this term.
Entered a policy which was accepted. Now what was
well, I would submit that Lina did not have any reason to think that Mondo had authority to accept that policy. It was accepted by Mondo. He took it and apparently just sat on it. And if there were not any specifications and any conversations between Lina and Mondo, I would submit that, yes, I would concede that that policy then would be binding upon the principal, in other words, the trust. But when there's a specific request and the insurance company says we're going to issue that policy with that term and then sends over to the agent, there needs to be some kind of additional conversation with the principal or a specific representation from Mondo that, no, the trust doesn't really need that term anymore.
No, the conversation needs to be, no, this isn't what we asked for when they get it. Either it's Mondo or you said they just went over, what, just papers to sign without the contract? Is that, and the company signed them? Does entering into this agreement? Incidentally, the state law does say it's the insured death of the person shall be payable to the beneficiary designated by the person insured. And in this case, I guess he didn't designate anyone. So then it goes to the I guess the family member says subject to the provisions of the policy in the event there is no designated beneficiary. I mean, that's referring to state law. It doesn't say anything about a trust in the state law. That's why I think they're saying that the state law doesn't allow it. But anyway, they just signed papers when they got over there without reading it, apparently.
Well, the trust did execute the signatory page. There's no question about it. I submit that the trust believed that the terms were contained in the policy that it requested from the insurance company. I would submit that while there may be a claim against the broker, I would also submit that the insurance company did not have any reason to believe that Mondo had the authority to accept that policy.
Well, suppose the beneficiary only got half of it. Instead of $100,000, only got $50,000. He said, hey, wait a minute. Our descendants get the whole amount, according to the contract. And then they say, no, they had some kind of an agreement, so forget about the contract. You only get half of it. Do you think that would be the way things should have come out?
Well, I would submit that the insurance policy wouldn't have been bought if there had been...
I'm talking about the person who died and his family submitted a claim. Do you think that it wouldn't have been enforceable? That the beneficiary wouldn't get the whole amount or at least the designated descendants?
Well, I would submit that as far as the beneficiary is concerned, the beneficiary would be getting the whole amount because the $50,000 that the employee would be getting would be something that was a benefit that was only provided for because the trust could recoup some of the policy premiums that it's paying by becoming a 50% beneficiary. In other words, the employee wasn't paying anything for this. This was something that was issued because the trust had some additional funds at its disposal and it's under an obligation to provide benefits for its members. It thought that this was going to be a way to provide that. The employee was not paying anything for this policy.
No, but I'm just, maybe he wasn't. Maybe he shouldn't have gotten any money if he wasn't paying anything. I don't know what your answer is to that. It's just that when you put the shoe on the other foot, I guess it's on the wrong foot, but the employee, this deceased employee had a vested right when he died.
I would submit they did not have a vested right because this was a benefit that was not bargained for.
It's
this
in
was
the something contract. That was I'll take that back. Not vested. It's a contractual right, and that it's what the contract says. I'm trying to just put it the other direction. You're saying because of a verbal dispute, the written contract doesn't apply.
Well, I would submit that there is no written contract because there was no meeting of the
sign?
minds.
What did they sign?
They, well, as sometimes happens in these cases, you have a principal of the trust who signs a signatory page, doesn't read the contract, never even has the contract delivered to the principal, and I think that's a critical issue in this case.
Your white sheet's up for whatever that means.
How about the time? What did you say?
How much time?
6 minutes left.
6 minutes left.
You're into your rebuttal.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm happy to answer any other questions. If I may just briefly say that with respect to the jurisdictional issue, I submit that Cigna, as the parent, is subject to the jurisdiction of this court. I think that the district court missed the issue here. I don't think this is an issue of piercing the corporate veil. My argument is that there was no corporate veil to be pierced. Cigna itself brags that it operates now as a single entity and that it operates through its subsidiaries. There is no Cigna without its subsidiaries, and that therefore Cigna is properly a party.
Well, you don't think Lina has enough money, or they're not a deep enough pocket? What does Cigna have to do with it?
If you asked me several years ago whether Lina has a deep enough pocket, I would say probably yes, but even the largest insurance companies sometimes get into trouble. I would submit that Cigna does not exist outside of its subsidiaries. There are a number of people outside of Lina who were involved in this in the factual history of this case, and I submit that they're all working under the entity known as Cigna.
Thank you. Thank you, Cameron. Mr. Ryan?
May it please the court?
Counsel.
I hope to first address the merits of the claims asserted against these two defendants, Life Insurance Company of North America, otherwise known as Lina, and Cigna Corporation, and demonstrate that the crucial underpinning of all of the claims asserted against them failed as a matter of law, namely that there was an enforceable insurance contract that was formed, actually two of them, two group policies that were formed back in 2003 when the trust manifested its assent to their terms by paying monthly premiums, month in and month out, for 9 months after they submitted the application and after their agent received the policies themselves. I will then turn to the reasons as to why this court should affirm the district court's determination that there was no personal jurisdiction over defendant Cigna Corporation based on the fact that Cigna Corporation did not purposefully establish the requisite minimum contacts with the forum state of Illinois. I might add, however, that should this court affirm based on the merits, it need not turn to the issue of personal jurisdiction because the claims asserted against both defendants are identical in this situation. The trust is charged with the knowledge of all information that its agent, Mr. Robert Mondo, knew or should have known. Under well-established Illinois law, the objective test is used to determine whether a party assented to the terms of a contract. Under the objective standard, a standard used by many states, including Illinois, whether a contract exists is determined based upon a reference to the party's conduct and the words and the documents. Actual mental thought processes are immaterial under that test. Here, the trust did in fact manifest its assent to the policies at issue by its conduct. It received the policies through its agent, undisputed agent, Mr. Robert Mondo, and a professional insurance broker and indeed a licensed attorney. The trust paid monthly premium month in and month out for 9 months straight without any objection to the terms of those policies. The trust acknowledged the existence of the issued policies in December of 2003 when its board of trustees met and discussed these very policies and how the proceeds of those policies would be distributed. And finally, the trust actually submitted a claim on behalf of its union members in May of 2004, Mr. Knight, and that was after the issuance and the delivery of these policies. Now, the trust argues that it did not actually receive copies of the policies, and therefore it didn't assent to their terms. However, it's undisputed that Mr. Robert Mondo did in fact receive those policies in November of 2004. And it was after the trust had signed the insurance application And after the trust had actually issued its first payment for these policies. Again, Mr. Mondo was undisputedly the trust agent. He was undisputedly the trust agent from 2001, 2 years before the events had issued, and all the way until the end of 2005, according to the corporate representative that we deposed, Ms. Murphy. The trust relied on Mr. Mondo, according to Ms. Murphy, for his insurance advice and to look out for its best interest. She testified that they expected him to handle all aspects of this particular insurance, to go out and issue the RFP, to solicit bids, to review the bids, and to handle the acceptance of those policies. And that's exactly what he did. He solicited bids from multiple carriers, not just Life Insurance Company in North America, but other, I think, five other insurance companies. He submitted those proposals to the trust, and the trust decided which one to select. And the trust selected Life Insurance Company of North America. The trust put him in motion with respect to all of the events in question. The trust controlled Mr. Mondo and made the ultimate decision as to which company to go with. So there can be no dispute as to whether or not Mr. Mondo was an agent of the trust for all of the events in question here.
Who from the trust kept in touch with Mondo?
We understand, based upon the evidence, that Mr. Mondo actually attended the December 2003 trustees meeting that we had, that I referenced earlier. He also took direction from Mr. Pichas, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, the chairman himself, Your Honor. The long and short of it is that Mr. Mondo had the policies. Mr. Mondo was provided with draft policies by a Ms. Rapp, who came into the situation when the implementation stage had begun, after the trust had decided which carrier to go with. So Mr. Mondo received draft policies, and those draft policies specifically provide a standard beneficiary provision, which is to say it was not a provision which directed the benefits to the trust. Those draft policies certainly put Mr. Mondo and therefore the trust on notice that the trust would not be the sole beneficiary of the proceeds as set forth in the request for proposal, the RFP.
You say sole beneficiary. Was there some communication where it came from them that said what the trust was going to be, and say half of it?
One of the curious aspects of this case, Your Honor, is this. The RFP itself states that the trust shall be the owner and the beneficiary of the proceeds. The beneficiary, thereby suggesting 100% of the proceeds. It's not until months later, in December of 2003, where the Board of Trustees of the trust meets and decides it would now be 50%. And the complaint herein alleges that the deal was 50%. However, if you look at Mr. Mondo's deposition testimony, he was asked specifically, what discussions did you have with Lina relative to this 50%? His testimony was, I believe on pages 93 through 97 of his deposition, that he had two discussions with the Mr. Turek. And those two discussions, if you refer to the pages themselves, relate to vague discussions. Really not much of a who, what, when, where, how, but instead what he says is the trust needs to be owner and beneficiary, to which Mr. Turek allegedly responded, according to Mr. Mondo, it shouldn't be a problem, quote unquote. There's supposedly another discussion, again prior to the issuance of the policies, where he again reminds Mr. Turek of the need to have the trust be the owner and the beneficiary. Again, don't think it's going to be a problem. The importance of this is that these two discussions, and these are the only two discussions referenced by Mr. Mondo that he could recall in his deposition, took place prior to the issuance of the policies. And under Illinois law, well-established Illinois law, the knowledge of Mr. Mondo, and indeed what Mr. Mondo should have known, having received both the draft policies and the final policies, was that the policies that were issued did not contain a provision whereby the trust would be either the sole or 50% beneficiary of the proceeds.
Was that pointed out anywhere other than just the language of the policy?
That excuse me, Your Honor, that being the
only the trust was not a beneficiary.
That's right. The policies themselves clearly and unequivocally contain the standard beneficiary provision that you see in most policies. Namely, it's whoever the insured designates as his or her beneficiary, and if there is no such designation, it goes by default to family members, and then there's a step process.
There was nothing that said, we don't believe Illinois law permits us to do what you wanted us to do.
No, Your Honor, but I might add that the RFP in question here provides that the carriers can use, quote, standard policy forms or words to that effect. And indeed, this is a standard policy form. And the application that was submitted contains reference to the fact that the policies themselves shall prevail. So in essence, what we have is an invitation to submit proposals, submitted to Lina as well as other carriers, and in response to that invitation, a proposal was submitted which contained the standard policy provisions for beneficiary designations.
How many insured were there?
Your Honor, I'm not sure exactly. I want to say somewhere in the neighborhood of 300.
That's a small, I mean, as these things go, a small union.
Fairly small union, right. But even if Mr. Mondo was not the agent, and we submit that he undisputedly was, the trust itself is charged with the knowledge of what is contained in those policies. And specifically, under Illinois law, an insured has an affirmative duty to review the terms of a new policy and is burdened with knowing its contents. Illinois law also provides that an insured has a duty to inform the insurer of any discrepancies between the coverage that was requested and the coverage that was actually provided.
With the drafts going back and forth, was anybody besides Mondo involved?
On the trust side of things?
On the contracts. Sorry.
Well, going on the contracts.
You said there were several drafts.
No, let me clarify, if I may, Your Honor. In September of 2003, after the trust had chosen Lina, Ms. Rapp of Lina sent to Mr. Mondo two draft policies, one for the life insurance and one for the accidental death and dismemberment coverage. Mr. Mondo admits that he received the draft policies. Thereafter, when the application had been signed by the trust and the first premium payment had been made, Ms. Rapp forwarded to Mr. Mondo the final policies, which he again admits to having received and even testified that he forwarded those on to the trust. Ms. Rapp actually followed up with Mr. Mondo, asked him, did you receive copies of the policies? Yes. Did you review them? And if you did, do you have any problem with the terms of these policies? To which Mr. Mondo undisputedly replied, everything looks fine. Thereafter, premium payments became due month after month after month. And for the next 9 months, the trust was paying Lina for these coverages, undisputedly. But the notion that there was never a contract formed with regard to either of these policies is belied by the fact that the trust put Mr. Mondo out there. And even if he wasn't his agent, Illinois law imposes a duty on the trust, on the policyholder in this instance, to read the policies. Had they read the policies, the plain language of those beneficiary provisions would have told them that there was that they were not either the sole beneficiary or a 50% beneficiary. In short, the trust clearly knew that there were two policies that had been issued. The trust had full access to those policies, either through Mr. Mondo or simply picking up the phone and calling Life Insurance Company of North America. And had they made such a simple request, they would have gotten the information that they needed at the inception of the coverage here. Moreover, Mr. Mondo and the trust's corporate representative, Ms. Murphy, acknowledged that this type of beneficiary provision is unusual. Well, if it's unusual, you would expect a prudent, sophisticated trust such as this to actually look at the policy that they bought, that they knew they had bought, they had been paying for 9 months.
And there's a, yeah, I guess, is it a counterclaim for the last 2 months? I guess it's a total of $75,000 premium?
That's correct, Your Honor. You'll recall that Mr. Heindel had terminated the coverage when this dispute result arose, but after they had paid the one death benefit claim for Mr. Knight in excess of $100,000. And it was at that time Mr. Heindel terminated the policies effective September of 2004. There were 2 months' worth of coverage that were undisputedly provided to the trust and which they were billed for and which the trust admits they never paid for. So Lina was on risk for the months of August and September of 2004. They billed for that coverage. They never received payment. The amounts in question are undisputed. If you look at the plaintiff's response to our statement of material facts pursuant to Local Rule 56.1, you'll see that the facts substantiating that particular counterclaim, Your Honor, are undisputed, and Judge Dow was perfectly correct in entering judgment on the counterclaim. There is a breach of contract claim that was asserted and dismissed by the district court. It was asserted in the alternative. The trust essentially alleges that the defendants accepted the terms of the RFP and thereby formed a contract whereby they would be paid for 50% of the benefits on any death claim. The trust further contends that the defendants breached by failing to pay the trust 50% of the death benefits. On appeal, the trust has failed to offer any argument or authority whatsoever in support of that claim or that argument, and therefore, the argument is waived under well-established law here in the Seventh Circuit. Nonetheless, Mr. Mondo and the trust representative admit that the RFP was not a valid offer of contract, but rather an offer to submit proposals, an invitation to negotiate. There was therefore nothing for Lina to accept vis-a-vis the RFP. Moreover, the RFP is missing an essential term of a contract, most notably the amount of the premium or the rate. Again, the RFP was not an offer which was susceptible to being accepted by Lina. And finally, the RFP stated, as I mentioned earlier, that the trust would be the beneficiary. The allegation in this complaint of the plaintiffs is that the trust was supposed to be a 50% beneficiary. If you scrutinize the RFP, there's nothing about the trust being a 50% beneficiary. The unjust enrichment claim was also asserted in the alternative. That, too, is unavailing here. Well-established law in Illinois holds that an unjust enrichment claim is not available if an express contract exists. Here, there were two express contracts which existed, the life policy and the AD&D policy. Secondly, the trust admitted the existence of these express contracts by incorporating paragraphs 37 and 38 in its complaint into the unjust enrichment count. Those paragraphs, if you look at the verified amended complaint, allege that there was an express contract. Therefore, Judge Dow was correct in entering judgment on the unjust enrichment claim. Finally, and not the least of which, there's no unjust enrichment claim because Lina did exactly what it promised to do. It provided coverage for 11 months. It was on risk. As you mentioned, Your Honor, if a person died and submitted a claim, Lina would be subject to the terms and conditions of its group policies. And in fact, it had to abide by those policies and did abide by those policies when it paid out the claim to Mr. Knight's heirs.
It's holding up a number over there, but I have no idea what it is.
If Your Honors would like, I'm happy to turn to the subject of personal jurisdiction over Cigna Corporation. Judge Shankier, we consented to Judge Shankier deciding that particular issue. There was enormous amount of discovery that was conducted relative to the personal jurisdiction issue over Cigna Corporation. That discovery resulted in the plaintiff submitting evidence in support of that personal jurisdiction, but the end result of it, as detailed by Judge Shanker in his very thorough opinion, is that the district court did not have personal jurisdiction over Cigna Corporation. Cigna Corporation is merely a holding company. Cigna Corporation
of course, if you're right on the rest of it, that's an immaterial issue. If you're right on the rest of what you're arguing about,
that's correct, Your Honor. So I'm prepared to discuss the personal jurisdiction issue if you would like. I'll answer any questions on that particular issue.
Didn't hear anything from him about it. Why should you get excited about it?
With that, then, I will simply ask that this court affirm the judgment of the district court, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. Mr. Cameron, how much time? You have 5 minutes, Mr. Cameron.
Thank you. I don't think I'll need all five, but if I may, just briefly, I do want to point out a couple of things. And there's no argument with respect to the general agency principles that apply. The issue is whether or not a trier of fact under these circumstances could state that the agency only extended so far. And I submit that although Mr. Mondo did have the authority to seek proposals containing what everyone recognizes as an unusual term, he didn't have the authority to accept something that did not contain that term. And even if he did, he was not the agent for the purpose either of accepting delivery of the policy or to alter that critical term.
Well, who sent the signature sheets, which is all the trust apparently paid attention to?
Well, it was signed by, I believe, the chairman of the trust, and it was delivered to Mr. Mondo, who did, I presume, delivered it to...
Mondo is the guy, and he sends the signature sheets, and nobody looked any further. So who else besides Mondo is at least speaking for the trust?
Well, I would submit that if the insurance company was going to issue a policy that did not contain the term that everybody said was not going to be a problem, that there was some kind of duty to say, well, look, you know, to the principal directly, your agent is being delivered this policy that doesn't contain that term. Are you okay with it? In other words, I believe that there was some apparent exceeding of Mondo's authority that was manifest to the insurance company. And if I may, I would also submit that with respect to the counterclaim, I'd be remiss in stating that there was a letter from Cigna's lawyer, Mr. Heindel, that did recognize there was no meeting of the minds. And although there's been some discussion in the lower court whether this should be taken literally, I submit Mr. Heindel was a lawyer. He did know exactly what no meeting of the minds meant. And I would submit that this is a small union, and that therefore, given the history of the decision to seek this policy, that once Mr. Heindel said that there was no meeting of the minds, the policy was effectively canceled. The trust could not afford to continue with this policy that it wasn't seeking in the first place, and that therefore, with respect to the counterclaim, once Mr. Heindel wrote this letter, whether or not he literally meant no meeting of the minds or not, that the trust was justified in not paying the rest of the premiums on the term of the purported policy. And I would also submit that there was not coverage provided to the trust because it was not the coverage, clearly, that everyone knows that the trust was seeking. And that therefore, the insurer is not entitled to the rest of the premiums.
Was it a one-year contract to start with?
It was... The written policy does appear to be a one-year contract,
right.
Yes.
So if somebody had died in the next 2 months, I assume they would all... I mean, the trust would have expected payment.
No.
No, huh?
In fact, they did not expect any payment. And in fact, I don't want to go outside the record, but I don't know if there were any other deaths in those 2 months.
Obviously, there weren't.
Well,
we'd have heard about that. This appears to be the only death.
It would not be proper, but I might have contrary information. But in any event, the trust considered it a dead issue at that point, as did Heindel. And I would submit that even if the court was to consider that there was a binding agreement so that the trust, so that Cigna could keep the $340,000 in premiums that they received in those 10 months, that the trust was justified in not paying those 2 months. Once Cigna communicated, there was no meeting of the minds. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.